A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you listening right now. Thank you. Maybe you're Brad or Kevin Morgan or Paul Thiessen or our brand new patron, the youngest member of our Patreon family, Daniel.
Yay, Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel. On this episode of DTNS, a side channel attack on Apple M-series chips and how to defend against it, OpenAI cozies up to the filmmakers, and Nicole Lee shares her experience riding in the robo-taxis of San Francisco. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, March 22nd, 2024. In Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
And from studio Redwood adjacent, that I didn't think I was going to be at today, but I am, I'm Sarah Lane.
From San Francisco, I'm Nicole Lee.
Drawing the top tech stories in Cleveland, I'm Len Peralta.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Yeah, our usual thing these days is Studio Animal House. We haven't heard Studio Redwood in a minute. That's crazy.
I know. I am back up in NorCal, neck of the woods. Long story. If anybody wants to subscribe to Have Such a Good Day, I'll tell you a lot more about that.
Right.
But in the interest of time, let's talk some tech news.
Let's start with the quick hits.
At PwnToWn Vancouver 2024, contestants demoed 19 zero-day vulnerabilities in Windows 11, Tesla, Ubuntu Linux, and other services and software in a battle to win $732,500 and a Tesla Model 3 car. And many awards were actually won. Habub's essay's Abdul Aziz Harari used an Adobe Reader exploit combined with an API restriction bypass and a command injection bug to gain access execution on macOS to earn $50,000. But that's not all. French security company Synactive won the Tesla Model 3 and also $200,000 after hacking the Tesla ECU with vehicle or VEH CAN bus 200,000 control in under 30 seconds using an integer overflow. Now, Theory security researchers Guanzhong Zhang and Yuno Li won $130,000 after escaping a VMware workstation VM to gain code execution as system on the host Windows OS using a chain targeting an uninitialized variable bug, a UAF weakness, so to speak, and a heap bust buffer overflow. So, you know, people won a lot of stuff.
17 years PwnToWn's been going on. Pretty cool that it's still kicking. Previously on Daily Tech News Show, we mentioned that Apple is reportedly in talks with Google and OpenAI, possibly even Anthropic, to provide cloud AI services for iOS. Of course, in China, you have to be vetted to offer AI services. And surprise, surprise, Google and OpenAI have not been approved. Weirdly, only Chinese companies have been approved to offer AI in China. So it should not be a shock that Apple is reportedly talking with China's Baidu about integrating its Ernie bot into iOS in China.
In the meantime, it's good to note that Microsoft has added to spell check to Notepad in Windows 11. Misspelled words are underlined in red now. You can right click to see suggested fixes, just like Word has been doing for quite some time, decades even. There's even an option to autocorrect as you type if you like to live on the edge, which, you know, I mean, many of you do. The feature is available to select users of Windows Insider Build 11.2402.18.0.
On May 20th, Microsoft will announce consumer versions of its Surface laptops, consumer versions of the business laptops it announced earlier this week. The reliable analysts out there expect those devices to run on ARM processors, not the Intel processors that the business models run on. That may give you pause about things like software compatibility, especially when you're talking about games. But Qualcomm told developers at GDC that its Snapdragon X Elite system will have emulation that can run x86 games at full speed. They said it's the GPU that's the issue, so don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. You won't even need to tweak any of your code. Now, the exception would be if your game uses kernel-level anti-cheat codes. Those won't work at all. However, developers can, of course, port their titles to ARM, and Qualcomm will also offer support for hybrid ARM development, which runs Windows libraries and Qualcomm drivers natively while emulating everything else.
A law in the U.S. state of Tennessee goes into force July 1st to protect songwriters, performers, and other musicians' unauthorized imitation by generative models. Photographs, likenesses are considered property right in Tennessee, not a publicity right. The Ensuring Likeness, Voice, and Image Security Act, or Elvis Act, Tennessee, get it, gives vocal likeness the same protection. It also makes people liable to civil action if they produce a person's name, photograph, voice, or likeness without proper authorization.
Yeah, it's going to come back up later in the show. Stick around.
Security pros have developed another side channel attack they call GoFetch that works against Apple's M1, M2, and M3 processors. This one is a little more complicated, however. It uses something called a data memory dependent prefetcher, or DMP. DMP looks for patterns in memory cache to anticipate data that might be needed and then fetch it in advance. So it speeds up operations in theory, but Tom, how does it actually work?
Yeah, how does this vulnerability work? Apple's DMP mixes data and memory access patterns. Intel has a version of this as well. They call theirs a different thing. They call it DDP, but theirs doesn't mix those. And that's an important distinction. In Apple's case, the DMP will activate to access the data when a data pointer fits the pattern. Don't let that get you all hung up. That means an attacker can feed inputs that look like a data pointer and then watch to see if the DMP activates. If it does, then that must be part of the cryptographic key. Do that enough times at computer speed, and you can reconstruct a cryptographic key, sometimes in as little as a half an hour. Now, you're not supposed to let the DMP mix the data request and the pointers for just this reason. The researchers were able to recreate private cryptographic keys of algorithms like OpenSSL, Diffie-Hellman, GoRSA, Crystal Skyber, and Dilithium on the M1. The DMP is built into hardware on the M1, M2, and M3, so even though they didn't try it with M2 and M3, there really isn't any reason that the attack wouldn't work on those. So, Sarah, what are they saying a Mac user ought to do?
Well, because it is a hardware vulnerability, there's no real way to patch it, but you can mitigate it through software. With the M3, you can turn off DMP. For the M1 and M2, you need to flood the DMP's input so the attacker won't be able to interpret the side channel clearly. Those solutions all slow down the processor. Now, Apple might not wish to do any of this because of a performance hit that Apple will get, with what I've laid out. So in the meantime, you should continue to just be real careful about what software you allow to be installed on your macOS devices. All right, Nicole, does this make you feel weird, throw away your Mac somewhere in between? You know, where are you?
Yeah, I think, like you mentioned, as long as you don't install malicious apps in the first place, but I think there's something called Apple's Gatekeeper, which is a thing you can turn on. I think it's on by default, and that way you won't likely install malicious apps in the first place. I think Gatekeeper allows apps from the Mac App Store and non-App Store installations from Apple registered developers. So if you want to be, you know, you may want to be extra cautious, of course, when manually approving apps from unregistered developers. But I think if you go like sort of the official routes of downloading your apps, I think you should be okay. And I think I should be okay too. Fingers crossed.
You're not going to throw away your Mac. Okay, good. I would not recommend throwing away your Mac. This is probably not going to affect most people, especially if you are really careful, like Nicole's recommending, which is a good recommendation. And just don't install software unless you're absolutely sure it's safe. And a good way to do that is to restrict the software you install to that has been vetted. Willie Scott in our chat room pointing out that, you know, technically the iPad Pro would be vulnerable to this as well. Any iPad, the iPad Air with the M chip would be. It wouldn't affect the iPhone or most iPads that have the A chip, but if they have the M chip, it might, if it has the M1, M2, or M3. Obviously, Apple can fix this in the M4. I don't think this is devastating, but it's good to be aware of, right?
I would say, yeah. I mean, you know, this is, you know, I think especially Mac users, you know, we often go like, doesn't apply to us, you know, Windows hacks, you know, or whatever. you know, we're in a different world now. And, you know, the more we know, the better.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point, because there is this sort of meme, for lack of a better word, that, oh, Mac users don't have to worry because Apple is secure. And that hasn't really been true for a long time. This is a situation where even the extra precautions that Apple does take in its software have to be respected and paid attention to in order to keep yourself safe. I don't think most people are going to fall victim to this, but, extra reason to continue to follow the safe installation of software practices that you have been following up until now.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about OpenAI going to Hollywood, everybody. OpenAI wants to break into the movie business, but you're saying, what in the heck? You know, what can't they do? Let us explain. Bloomberg sources say that OpenAI has scheduled meetings in Los Angeles. That is obviously, you know, where Hollywood is located, although Hollywood is very global at this point. Next week, with content studios, media executives, and talent agencies in an effort to form partnerships in the industry, encouraging filmmakers to integrate OpenAI's new video generator into their work. Reportedly, in late February, last month, OpenAI COO Brad Lightcap ran some conversations in Hollywood as well. They have been around the block. Along with a couple of his colleagues, Lightcap reportedly demonstrated the capabilities of Sora. That's the unreleased new service that can generate realistic looking videos, short videos, but realistic, up to a minute in length based on text prompts from users. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman was seen attending parties in Los Angeles during the weekend of the Academy Awards. So, you know, besides the fact that,
what
you know, cool people are gonna cool people gonna cool. But otherwise, Nicole, you know, what do you think about this? I mean, we're obviously in very early days here, but what do you think they're going for?
I mean, to your point, it's so early days to where, like, I've seen some very impressive Sora videos, obviously, but they're only like, what, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, maybe that, maybe less than that. Yeah. So they're very short clips. And there was some Sora videos I've seen that are like horrible. They're just like, they're mangled faces and mangled bodies. So they're not good at all. So obviously there's still a need for like human actors in the situation. And I think if you use it as a tool, perhaps in your production process and not replacing labor per se, then I can kind of see it being used. But it really depends on what executives want this AI to do, and whether or not the labor unions have a say in all of this as well.
Well, labor unions had a say in this a long strike that they got written into a contract. So there's at least a little bit of protection there. I also imagine that Brad Lightcap and Sam Altman would deliver a long, slow sigh if they hear someone say, well, I hope you're not going to replace actors with this, because while they probably wouldn't want to say it out loud, they probably know, like, yeah, this thing isn't anywhere close to being able to do an entire movie. I look at this and I think they are smart to engage the movie studios as a friend to say, look, we have not released this public. We're trying to do the right thing. We're trying to be safe. Let's introduce you to what it can and cannot do and see where it fits in your pre and post-production processes. Because I feel like that's what realistically this is good for. This is not good for replacing an actor, but the kind of thing that we've seen where you can make an act, you can de-age an actor, or you can sort of tweak something where an actor only has to deliver the lines, things that you would do with motion capture and CG. This is not that different than that. It just can do it faster and easier.
I think also, you know, there have been some pushback in recent months and maybe years even on how VFX workers have been, you know, overworked to the point where, like, they, you know, like, bringing long hours to do all the things that Marvel and DC wants them to do. So maybe this will help them. Of course, you know, obviously they should be given, you know, full employment rights as well. But in addition to, perhaps, you know.
That's
a good point. I mean, you know, we talk all the time about people saying, oh, no, taking the jobs. And we've talked about how we don't think, you know, here on DTNS that is always going to be the situation. In fact, it can make very highly skilled people just be better at their jobs. But at the same time, you know, I think of something like Toy Story. You know, it's like, can AI at some point make, you know, Toy Story Part 7? I don't know where we're at this point, you know, but maybe. I mean, we might be going to that point. And is that going to be a great movie? Maybe if you're 5 years old, you say, yeah. Maybe if you're my age, you say, well, it wasn't that good. You know, it wasn't as smart. You know, it was different. But I think, you know, that's the conversation that we're having at this point, is like, what can we make that is considered good content?
It can't do any of that stuff yet. That's the thing I keep going back to, is like,
well,
yeah,
no, not
it's
now.
So far away. And OpenAI is in a weird position because they want you to believe that it's capable of doing that, or it's going to be capable of doing that with GPT-5. And I think it's getting closer, but it's never, ever, never say never. It's going to be a long time before it can do it unsupervised. And as soon as you have to supervise it, well, then you have to bring in a human. You have to guide it. You have to tweak it. You have to polish it. And the more I use AI, the more I realize, man, it's really helpful at some things, but it always needs me to fix it. It always needs me to polish it. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that's what's going on here, is they're like, yeah, you could make Toy Story in half the time. You could produce, you know, 3 Toy Stories a year if you wanted. Please don't do that.
Right.
but you know what?
You could
increase the production level and keep the same employment, right? Like, so don't replace the programmers. Use them to increase the output. Use them to increase the quality of the output, because this tool lets them stop doing grunt work. That's what they should do. I'm not saying it's what they will do, but it's what they should do. And I think that's probably what OpenAI is pitching here.
Yeah.
At least I hope so. Well, folks, sometimes you may look at Tom and go like, great. Yeah, you have all kinds of great ideas for what OpenAI should be doing. What do you do in a week? Well, I've got 60 seconds worth of video to show you. It's Tom's top 5 this week. It's the tech I use in a week. You've seen the YouTube memes out there, food I eat in a week, things I do in a week, places I go in a week. This is tech I use in a week. Go check it out. It's only 60 seconds long. It's the latest top 5. You can catch it at Daily Tech News Show on TikTok, DTNS Picks on Instagram, and at youtube.com/Daily Tech News Show.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Auto Week posted a story this week written by Todd Lassa called "Forget Flying Cars, Where Are the Robotaxis?" After several accidents involving self-driving cars, there's been some public backlash as well as vandalism. Lassa cites a March 2022 Pew survey, which found that 44% of people surveyed believed that widespread use of driverless cars would be bad for society. 28% felt they were good, and 29% were just not sure. But not many people have even ridden in an autonomous car because, you know, you have to be in certain places to even be able to do that. Nicole has, though, and Nicole is with us today to tell her tale. After riding them in multiple times various areas, Nicole, let's talk about autonomous cars. How do you feel about them?
I have the same concerns as a lot of people do on safety and whether or not, like, you know, they follow traffic rules, that kind of thing, whether they're safe to ride on. But I was very excited, just full disclosure, I was very excited to ride in an autonomous robo-taxi per se. I just don't like talking. You know, whenever I'm in a Lyft or Uber, mm-hmm. I don't want to talk to the driver. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk to anyone. I don't want to listen to any music. I just, it's like in my zone, you know. And there was one point, I think last year, where I rode a Lyft, and he was just full on singing. He was just full on singing to a song. And I'm just like, I'm happy for you.
Was he good?
But it was just like... He was okay, I guess.
He was all right.
He was just full on singing. I'm just like, man, it is 11 p.m. right now, and I don't want to listen to you singing. So it was just like, anyway, I just was not pleased with this. Whereas with the robo-taxi, there's just no one there, and you can play your own songs, you know, like it's just you. So I'm like one of those people that I just want to be my own zone and just leave me alone in the car. So I took a Cruise last year before they got shut down, and I wasn't recently been using Waymo a lot more in San Francisco, and the reason, so Cruise, the way they used to operate in San Francisco was they only operated between the hours of 9 p.m. to like 6 a.m. mm-hmm. and only within the confines of San Francisco itself. And for Waymo, they operate 24/7, but again, within the confines of San Francisco. And my experiences with both are varied. One observation I will say is that they are very cautious, like almost overly cautious, to the point where like they will stop at every intersection, which is what you should do. But a lot of drivers don't always stop all the way, you know, at every intersection. But they will stop at every intersection, every light. They are like almost overly cautious is what I would say. Like, to the point where, like, they're very heavy on the brake, uh-huh, and you feel it as a passenger.
So my mom got it.
It's a brake. Like, exactly. Kind of. Like, that's kind of a good comparison.
That's definitely
of, like,
how my mom drove. Like, I'm not saying all moms drive like that. I'm saying my mom specifically, definitely. That just
Yeah, like very like cautious driving, which, again, is what you want, but also, like, to the point where, like, you get kind of annoyed as a passenger. Like, whoa, that's a lot of braking, you know? But that was fine. And the two things that I didn't quite like, and I think this is same on both Cruise and Waymo, but even more so with Cruise, was that they never picked you up where you want them to pick you up. You always have to, like, walk a couple of blocks or something for you to pick them up, which makes sense in certain situations because they don't want to be, like, blocking traffic. And they want to be pick you up at a place where, like, it's easy for them to, like, get to the curb so you can open the door, kind of a thing, which is fine. But, like, there are some situations where, again, I think they're overly cautious, where, like, there's clearly a space for the car to go there, but it's not a big enough space, but it's, like, it's too cramped of a space. So they will, like, find a giant space to park by the curb, but that's usually, like, a block or two away. So you have to, like, travel to the thing. So that's one thing. The other thing, and this is, I think, within San Francisco, I'm not sure how it is in Phoenix. I'm not sure how it is, how we will be in Los Angeles, which is an interesting point, is that in San Francisco, anyway, they're not allowed to go on freeways. Mm-hmm. So what that means for travel within San Francisco, anyway, is that it's typically a little slower, a little longer, because you have to avoid freeways. And you only have to go on surface streets. And I don't know how that'll work in Los Angeles, which is an interesting question.
At rush hour, it'll work great because you can't make any progress on the freeway anyway, right? So
yeah, you know,
right. Okay.
Like, I mean, I
just
have
takes Sepulveda,
you know,
all the way down is a thing I have said many times to an Uber driver.
Adaptive cruise control. I'm like, this is pretty great, but if I really didn't have to think about it, and you know, doing work in the back seat type thing, I mean, that's the dream, as long as it works well.
The weird thing is that the highway driving is more proven for autonomous systems, right? It's harder for them to do the surface streets. So they're doing the harder thing for them, which is why I think you were experiencing such, like, frustration at, like, oh my God, this is taking forever. They're being so extra cautious. That's really interesting to think about.
Yeah. And the other thing is that based on my personal experience, again, I do agree with Cruise, with them stopping Cruise, because the stopping Cruise's operators, because they have been in very serious altercations. Like, there was a pedestrian that was injured severely. I completely agree with them stopping Cruise's operations. Waymo, from my experience, does tend to have very good sensors. There's a little LCD screen on the back when you try to get in the car, the passenger seat. You can see that they have their sensors on their cars. They can see, like, a wide berth around them. So they can see vehicles and I guess pedestrians even, like, just way bigger and way larger of a situation that even, like, a driver would be able to, like, know by looking around, know whether a car's coming.
Can you see what they see when you're in the car, when you're as a rider? Do they have displays?
Yeah, they will show the sensor view on the display.
Yeah.
So you can see from a top down view, oh, there's, like, two cars two streets away from me. And, like, as a driver, I would never be able to see that, right?
Yeah,
but as this vehicle, you can sense these oncoming vehicles. So that's interesting for me. This is not really related to the driving capabilities of the cars, but the other thing that I found personally annoying is gawkers, street gawkers, sidewalk. I find that kind of, I don't know, weirdly invasive. Like, I'm just trying to get to my place. But there are people standing there.
Well, yeah, because you're like in the bridge technology situation, right? You know, where you're like, I'm doing a thing that works.
That
and people
would
are like,
go away, right? People used to gawk at iPhone users too. So, like,
I'm sure, but it was like taking photos. I'm like, okay, taking photos. Like, there was one guy that was so brazen. He came up right to the door, but it was in traffic. It was behind like a red light at the traffic. And this guy just came out right to the door and just looked in the window. I'm like, Excuse me.
It sounds like you never had a negative reaction to the technology personally. It was the humans that caused more problems for you.
It was the humans. It was just like, okay, just let me be by myself.
So you never had an accident or you were not involved in anything like that? Anything negative?
No. There was one, again, small incident, but I think it does show the flaws of the service. So Waymo, whenever it sees a stop sign, it'll stop, which makes sense, right? But there was one time when it was a construction zone, mm-hmm. and someone had a makeshift stop sign in the middle of the street, and it stopped at that. It was like, that's not a real stop sign. That was like some construction makeshift stop sign. But it stopped in the middle of the road. Mm-hmm. So that's not good.
Yeah,
but also like it was just following the.
It was it was on the safer side. Yeah, I think it's interesting that it's a really good perspective to get from someone like you that has written these. That yes, all you hear about are the negative accidents, and you don't hear as much about the accidents that happen with human drivers that happen every day. But in reality, they're trying to be so cautious, it's almost frustrating for you. Just the last thing before we move on to the mailbag, how many rides do you think you took overall so far?
Oh, more than a dozen.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot.
All right.
I use it a lot. Yeah. It's basically replaced Uber for me.
Wow. Wow. That's great. Well, thank you, Nicole, for sharing that with us. Keep an eye on what Nicole's doing, because I'm sure she's going to keep sharing more of those experiences. All right. Let's check out the mailbag.
Let's do it. We got a new one from Rico, who sent us an audio message responding to Kevin, who sent us a message a couple weeks ago about how to play a series of videos, sort of like, you know, the old days of cable, kind of like old school
TV. Hey,
DCNS
crew, this is your Belgian drinking buddy, Rico. Look, back on show 4697, somewhere around February 1st, a listener by the name of Kevin wrote in to, you know, ask for some kind of ideas or propose an idea, because he missed the days of cable, that he could just leave his TV playing stuff, and it was kind of just background noise, right? And, you know, you guys recommended a Pluto TV or something like this, and it reminded me of something, and I think it was maybe Justin Robert Young, could have been Brian Brushwood, who recommended this many years ago, but it stuck with me, and I'm surprised that to this day nobody has ever implemented something like this. And it is something like this, like, imagine a Netflix, right? You have a bunch of stuff bookmarked, and instead of next time I open Netflix, don't just give me the list. Just start playing one of those things right away. But the trick is, don't play from the beginning. Start from like 15, 20 minutes into it. You know? And I noticed that I did this trick myself manually, and it's amazing how many of these things I checked off my list. Because, I don't know, anytime you see that introduction reel and all this, the opening of anything, it's heavy. Put me 15 minutes into it, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I can watch this. And next thing you know, it's 2 hours later, and I've watched the whole movie that I've been promising myself since like 5 years to watch. I finally did it. Thanks.
Thank you, Rico. He is, in fact, literally my drinking buddy.
That's so fun.
Yeah, I've had a beer with Rico.
You've met Rico. Yeah.
It's good to hear from you, man. And Netflix did have one of their Hacker Day projects where they were trying to do something like you're describing, but they never really rolled it out for people to use as part of the regular platform. So good memory and a good thing to think about. All right, before we wrap up, we should check in with Len Peralta, who has been illustrating today's show. Len, what have you drawn?
Hey, do you remember in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, there's that character named Benny? He's a taxi, you know, that drives around autonomously.
Okay.
Yeah, sort of.
I remember that.
So the answer to where are the robotaxis is this. Benny is taking him out, right? Because he's
a competition. Benny.
That's what I think is happening.
Oh, Benny. So,
yeah, poor Benny. He's just sort of like, you know, he's around Toontown.
I mean, he's into
stuff.
It.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. He's not into it. That's the thing. He's taking
him
out.
He's right? only into him doing it. Yeah. All right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't know nothing, man. If you're a Benny fan, and I know many of you are, you can go to my Patreon, patreon.com/Len. You get this immediately. Or I got to be honest with you guys, go to my online store. If you're not going to get this, you know, commission me for something. I'd love to draw something for you. So go ahead and do that. LenPeraltaStore.com.
Yeah. It's like AI except a human. You can prompt Len and he'll draw something.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's amazing.
Well, Len, always a pleasure. Nicole Lee, so nice to see you back. It's been too long. Let folks know where they can keep up with your latest.
I haven't updated in a while, but you can go to NicoleLee.news. That's my newsletter. And you can find what I'm up to there.
Nicole's Little Newsletter.
That's Little, the, oh, haha.
That's jokes. Cute.
Patrons, stick around for the extended show Good Day Internet. Friday means we try to have a little fun. We do quizzes, we do games, and the great GDI debates are back. We are going to be talking about all kinds of cool stuff. So by all means, stick around to find out what we debate.
Indeed. Just a reminder, though, we do the show live. You can catch the show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We hope you have a wonderful weekend. We will be back on Monday with Trisha Hershberger joining us. Talk to you then.
This week's episodes of Daily Tech News Show were created by the following people. Host, producer, and writer Tom Merritt. Host, producer, and writer Sarah Lane. Executive producer and booker Roger Chang. Producer, writer, and co-host Rob Dunwood. Video producer and Twitch producer Joe Koontz. Technical producer Anthony Lemos. Spanish language host, writer, and producer Dan Campos. Science correspondent Dr. Nikki Ackermans. Social media producer and moderator Zoe Detterding. Our mods, Beatmaster, W. Scottis 1, BioCow, Captain Kipper, Steve Guadarrama, Paul Reese, Matthew J. Stevens, a.k.a. Gadget Virtuoso, and J.D. Galloway. Mod and video hosting by Dan Christensen. Music and art provided by Martin Bell, Dan Luders, Mustafa A., Acast, and Len Peralta. Live art performed by Len Peralta. Acast ad support from Tatiana Matias. Patreon support from Tom McNeil. Contributors to this week's shows included Scott Johnson, Chris Christensen, Justin Robert Young, Patrick Beja, and Nicole Lee. And thanks to all the patrons who make the show possible.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.